The company Signet Jewelers, which owns K Jewelers and Zales, told investors last month that sales of engagement rings are down so far this year. Company executives said that part of that is economic, higher inflation stopping would-be couples from purchasing expensive jewelry. And they say part of it is a ripple effect from the early days of the pandemic when many single people weren't going on dates and meeting the partners they'd eventually proposed to. That's one company's view, not a detailed scientific study. But our relationship milestones often come with significant price tags that can bring harsh economic realities into our love lives. We're exploring the financial costs associated with love and romantic relationships at every stage, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. What role have finances played in your relationships and key decisions? Have you delayed getting married or having kids maybe because of the costs? Have you found creative ways to save money in dating or marriage? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Sarah Halpern-Meekin is the Vaughn Bascom Professor of Women, Family, and Community and Professor of Human Development and Family Studies at the UW-Madison School of Human Ecology. She's also faculty at the La Follette School of Public Affairs at UW-Madison. Sarah, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me today.
Big picture. I think we like to think that love conquers all, but what effect, how big an effect do economic conditions and our personal finances have on these relationship milestones?
Yeah, this certainly couldn't be a less romantic topic, right? Good thing it's not Valentine's Day. But this is actually a topic that we spend a lot of time thinking about the role of individual finances and the role of larger economic circumstances in society and what role those play in the relationship decisions people make and the stresses that relationships experience. And by and large, we find that there's an association between these things across lots of different aspects of relationships, the partners we choose, whether or not we get married, whether or not our relationship is under stress, when and how we have children. So there's so many aspects to your question where we really do see connections between finances and relationships.
Something that's come up on conversations on the show here over the last few years is this idea of a marriage gap, or at least a long-term commitment gap, where people with college educations, higher salaries, more likely to find that long-term partner, people at lower socioeconomic levels getting less likely. Is that something you've seen?
Yeah, so we know that about two-thirds of people who have graduated college end up getting married, and that's compared to only about a quarter of people who stop schooling before graduating high school. So kind of looking at those ends of the, you know, educational credential spectrum, we see really big differences in marriage behavior. It's important that we don't equate that with finding a long-term partner, because one of the other trends that we've seen, especially over the last 40 years or so, are really big growth in what we call cohabitation, so living together outside of marriage. So people can find those long-term partnerships. Whether those last and whether they turn into marriage, though, can be a different question, and one that we do see a really big gap on based on education.
Now, we heard the jewelry company there blaming COVID in part on postponing relationship milestones, the dating, the engagement, the marriage for people. When you look back at the last few years over COVID, what impact do you see it having on our decisions to date and get married and things like that?
So I'd say, you know, what the company is claiming is not, it's not totally wrong. It's not totally the whole story. When there's a lot going on in the world, like financial turmoil of a recession or a pandemic, couples are more likely to delay making changes to their relationships. And that includes putting off marriage. It also includes delaying divorce. So during the early years of the pandemic, we saw about a 10% decline in marriage rates and divorce rates. So people sort of stomp the brakes, basically, when something big is going on and put off making those big decisions. That said, we also know that we've seen a long-term trend, not just during the pandemic, in people waiting to later ages to get married and a smaller proportion of the population being married. So we're seeing people being older and older when they do finally get married.
Do we have any idea what's driving that, either people not getting married or getting married later?
Yeah, so I think there's a lot of factors that come together, and some of it does have to do with this starting premise, right, that we talked about it being really expensive to buy that engagement ring or have that wedding. So we do have these cultural ideas about what getting engaged or getting married should look like. And those have changed a lot over time. They've really ratcheted up. So we have this idea, I think, in our culture today that a big white fancy wedding dress and a large bridal party and a big reception, those are traditional things. And that's what a wedding should look like. So you have to have enough money to do those things. But that actually didn't become common until the last 50 years or so. Before that, people often had small weddings, sometimes just in their parents' living rooms. So as some of our cultural standards for what, you know, marriage should look like, what a wedding should look like, as those things ramp up, people often feel like they need to wait longer and longer in order to get married. So that's part of what's going on. The other thing I'd say is we have these changing views about what marriage represents. So Andrew Cherlin, who's a really well-known family sociologist, he talks about how marriage used to be seen as the cornerstone of adult life, that piece that gets laid down before the rest of the building gets constructed. But now we see it as like the capstone on our adult lives. It's that piece that you put on the end after you have everything else set in place. So that means you have to have your job set in place, your finances, maybe you've even bought a house. And it just takes longer then to be ready to meet our cultural ideas around what marriage should look like today than it did in the past.
Talking to Sarah Halpern-Meakin from UW-Madison, looking at the economy, finances, and our relationship milestones. And you could join in at 800-642-1234. Compare yourself to, say, your parents' or grandparents' generation. Did you get married later? Why do you think that is? Are the costs leading you to delay doing something? Dating, finding someone, buying that engagement ring, buying that big fancy wedding, or did you economize on that? And hey, how about the cost of having kids? Have you considered that and maybe put off having kids in your own life? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Sarah, let's talk about the cost of having kids and childcare and how that's affecting people's decisions. What do we know?
So we certainly know that's a cost that's risen a lot. Our childcare market, basically in Wisconsin, but in the country as a whole, it really doesn't work. So there's really high demand, not enough supply, really low wages, and the costs are too high. So it sort of doesn't work for anybody. And that certainly can affect the decisions that some people make. But it can also, rather than affecting people's decisions about having children, it can affect the decisions people make about whether or not partners work part-time, work split shift. So it can affect family life in a lot of different ways. I think we, you know, can connect the decisions people make around having kids back to those larger conversations we were having earlier about feeling like there's instability in the world, feeling like you want to have your feet firmly under you before you get started having children. So all of those larger factors around finances can affect some of the decisions people make too. And for those people who want to wait until after they're married to have kids, as the age when people get married gets older, the age at which people have children then gets older, and the sort of time frame in which you can have kids before it becomes harder to do so can get smaller and smaller.
Yeah, in a way, when I think back, Sarah, there's always some kind of instability in the world if you look back through history, and there's always some kind of uncertainty about our life stages, our careers. Are these changes being driven by economic changes, or are these cultural changes in the way we think of these institutions?
You're totally right. There's always been, different sources of instability on a global level and a local level, but our ideas around what family life needs to look like have changed a lot. And so I think that cultural piece that you pointed to is really important. In family sociology, we talk about this idea of deinstitutionalization, which is this huge word. And basically it means marriage is just less of a guiding institution in our society than it used to be. In family life, there are fewer and less constraining social roles and social rules, like all wives must do this or all fathers do that. And what that can mean is there's a lot more freedom. There's a lot less stigma around having your family look or function differently than someone else's family. But it also means that life is harder to navigate because you have to figure it out yourself. There's not just the way that everybody does things. And so we've seen those really big changes in our cultural ideas and ideals around family life.
Talking to Sarah Halpern-Meekin, professor of human development and family studies at UW-Madison, looking at the financial costs involved in our romantic relationships, the role that economics play in when and how we date, get married, have kids, and hoping you'll put a face on it, or at least a voice on it, at 800-642-1234. If you're willing to share your experiences, did you put off getting married maybe longer than, say, your parents' generation did? What drove that? Did you hold off on scheduling that wedding till you could afford something bigger? Did the costs of childcare weigh into your decision of when and whether even to have kids? Join in with your experiences at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or were you like me and you economized and you got a $30 wedding ring and did in fact get married in your mother-in-law's living room? 800-642-1234 or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll pick up the conversation coming up next on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue our talk with Sarah Halpern-Meekin, professor of human development and family studies at UW-Madison. She's with us today to look at the role money plays in our love lives, from dating to marriage, even having kids. You could join in at 800-642-1234. What role has money or finances played in your romantic life, or lack of same at some stages? Have finances influenced your decisions on when to get engaged or married or have kids? Join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Let's bring on a caller now. Jeff is with us in Superior. Hey, Jeff.
Hi, good afternoon. I have what I think is a funny story to tell. In my, you know, when I went to college, we stayed up late at night talking about philosophical things like marriage and family and money and careers and stuff. Well, I eventually went into low-income ministry where I worked with poor people, and I met a really nice lady that I really liked, and I asked her to marry me. And she goes, "No, I won't marry you. You don't have anything." I says, "Well, neither do you." And so we eventually didn't get married, but we stayed friends. But 30 years later, I found out neither one of us married, and we still don't have anything.
Jeff, thanks for the call. You know, Sarah, I think that question of, am I marrying a spouse who's going to make enough money on one side or the other, an eternal question and probably an issue these days, too.
Yeah, you know, what Jeff was speaking to, right, is this idea that what's okay in a dating partner might not be okay in a spouse. And so we see that people will do things like starting to cohabit together so that they can shore up their finances. But then we'll also see cohabitors saying they're putting off marriage because they're not financially ready for it. And what's so interesting there, right, is those people are already living together. So they're living together the same way they would be if they were married. But it's this cultural idea we have around what your relationship, what your finances should be like to make them marriage worthy. And when that bar is hard to reach, it can mean that people avoid taking those steps either short term or, like Jeff was saying, for the long term.
Jeff, thanks for being willing to share your story at 800-642-1234. You could join in and share your story of how you hit those milestones, whether money was a factor in who you dated, when you married, if you married, whether or not you had kids. Join in at 800-642-1234. Sarah, what are some of the biggest questions on your mind when it comes to these relationship milestones? as we have this post-COVID economy, what are some of the big unanswered things for you right now?
I think there's just a lot of really interesting trends that we're seeing. You know, as I was saying, we're seeing more people do family life in their own way, right? It's not just dictated by, you know, this is the one way to live a family life. And so we're seeing more variation in what that looks like. We're seeing more unmarried couples buy houses together. So about 1 in 10 home buyers recently were unmarried couples. That's a really serious form of financial and long-term commitment, right? You know, you have a 30-year mortgage. That's a long-term commitment to each other. We see more people having children together outside of marriage. So about 4 out of 10 births today are to unmarried people. That, again, is going to be a lifelong connection you have with this other person. So you can get divorced, but that's always going to be your kid's other parent. And so one of the things that we're interested in is understanding more about how people navigate and create family life when they have to figure it all out themselves, because we don't have those strict norms telling us this is how you have to be a family.
And something you just mentioned reminded me of something you said earlier, and this is something I've seen in my own extended family where people living together break up, keep living together because they can't afford to maintain two separate households. Again, I've seen this in my own extended family. Is that something we're seeing at large?
So we certainly hear those anecdotes. I think especially we'll hear it like in New York City, other really expensive cities where it's not possible to even find an apartment, you know, let alone live separately, that finances do drive these decisions. I know in some of my own research that we've seen that when people are living together and they do break up, they're more likely to get back together. So not moving out with each other sort of puts you in proximity, makes it more likely you're going to fall back into bed together at the very least, even if not, you know, reunite long term. And so these financial decisions and circumstances really do shape the trajectories of relationships. And, you know, we can also talk about how they shape the stressors that relationships are under, because that's another component of what goes into this this mix of finances influencing relationships.
Let's go back to our callers now. Kara is with us in Waukesha. Kara, hi. Are you there, Kara?
Yeah, I'm here. Hi.
Yeah, go ahead. What did you want to tell us about?
Yeah, so I kind of have something to add to it. I've got a partner that I've been living with for almost 10 years now, and we personally have made the decision not to get married simply for the fact that he had a harder time, you know, growing up, didn't have the best credit score, you know, in his young adult life, whereas I did have those resources available to me. So, you know, I actually went out, bought a house. We lived together under my mortgage, but we get a lot of pressure from the outside about, hey, you guys have been together. Why aren't you married yet? You know, when are you going to have kids, when it's really us making the decisions for ourselves financially not to get married because it's setting us up for success due to just one person having a better credit score than the other at this point.
And Kara, thank you for calling in and sharing that. Do you explain that to, you know, the family member who says, hey, when are you getting married? Or do you just kind of give them a quick, short answer, a none of your business kind of deal?
Pretty conservative Christian background. So I guess, you know, living out of wedlock is not something that's smiled upon from my immediate family, whereas from his family, he comes from a Latin American background, so they're much more comfortable with us living together under out of wedlock, whereas my family is, it's a sensitive subject that comes up at holidays a lot.
Kara, thank you so much for sharing that with us. Sarah, there's that we're doing our family the way we want to, yet also facing, at least from one side of the family, some social pressure.
Yeah, and that really speaks to the way that we've seen a relatively rapid cultural change around this. And so you still have people who are more committed to those old cultural norms and people who are, you know, have moved on from being guided by those cultural norms. What Kara speaks to, right, is this issue around what does it mean for our finances to be united? And so, you know, when people get married, their credit scores do remain separate. So you don't take on your spouse's bad credit. But if you go to make purchases together and you're both putting your names on that car loan application or that mortgage application, then both of your credit scores are taken into account. So that's one of those times where joining finances can matter. There are other circumstances where getting married can be financially beneficial. So it can affect your access to your spouse's health insurance that they might have through an employer. It can be beneficial tax-wise for some couples. It can also be costly tax-wise for other couples, depending on what your earnings are like. And so there are lots of those individual decisions that couples need to make in considering how they're going to be together as a couple long-term and what that might mean for whether they come out ahead or face more financial struggles because of it.
Kara, thanks for that call. And Sarah, we'll leave it there. Thanks again for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
That's Sarah Halpern-Meekin, Vaughn Baskin Professor of Women, Family, and Community and Professor of Human Development and Family Studies at the UW-Madison School of Human Ecology. She was with us today for a look at the ways finances and the economy impact our romantic relationships and key relationship milestones. There is still time for you to share your own story. Do you have a unique setup for your family, at least compared to maybe previous generations? If you're willing, love to hear what led to that decision. If you feel social pressure from friends, family members, and others to change things, let us know. You can do that over on the Ideas Network Facebook page or send us an email, ideas@WPR.org.